Welcome. I'm Jessica Teigen, and this is the Evolving to Exceptional podcast, where we talk about reaching peak performance in our workplaces, homes, and communities so that we can live our best life possible, an exceptional life. I want to welcome back our Evolving to Exceptional listeners to this week's episode. We have another human resources professional here with us today to share with us a little bit of her experience, and specifically her experience as it relates to and what she's observed in terms of the importance of authenticity in leadership and authenticity of people and how that impacts our roles and our workplaces and how to do that really effectively. So today we've got Olivia Bryant with us, and she comes from her most recent role as a director of human resources. And she is here to share with us some of her experience and wisdom and background. Olivia, I want to welcome you and give you a chance to give us a little bit, or tell our audience a little bit about you and your background, how you got to where you are today, and why it is that you're passionate about this topic and wanting to talk about people and performance.
Thank you, Jessica. I really appreciate being invited on today. It's a great platform to talk about this topic, especially with the state of the market and human resources as we see it today, which is definitely on a roller coaster ride, I think, for many people. So it's great to share some of my expertise and wisdom that I've gained over the years. Absolutely true. I spent almost 8 years, 7.5 or so years at TIBCO Software, based in the Bay Area here in Palo Alto. And about a year ago, we went through a large-scale merge with Citrix, in which the company became Cloud Software Group. And through that journey, my role, my team, our HR team was largely dissolved within the US market. And so with that, I've been on a bit of my own adventure for the past 8 or 9 months. Now, as I've been navigating, one, taking a rest post-COVID, post-finishing my MBA, I needed some time to regroup with my family. Secondarily, I needed, I think, just a reframe time for myself of looking back on my experience and capturing a lot of what we built as a team and what I experienced in multiple decades of work to bring it forward to a platform like this. And now I am on an active job search myself, along with a lot of other people on the market. So it's been fun. It's been very special, actually, to be able to take some time and especially regroup with my family. And I think it leaves everyone in a little bit of that uncertainty. It comes with that feeling of what comes next. What's this going to look like for me, especially in the market as it's evolving day by day right now?
I think it's so interesting. And you hit on this just briefly, but you actually got your MBA while working full time, while raising your kids. You were doing it all at the same time. And you and I shared the stresses that come from that and come from juggling it all. And the interesting experience that you get to have when you transition out of a role, out of a workplace, but you're not yet moving into another workplace. You don't yet have another position that you're moving into, and the opportunities that creates. Can you speak a little bit to how you've chosen to use that time and make the most of that time, and maybe why you've chosen to use it in that way?
Yeah. So you 100% you nailed it on the head. Having your role dissolve, whether it's through a sudden layoff or through maybe a longer process where you know the role's no longer needed. So much of our identity is tied to what we do, what our titles are, where we work. At least that's been the way I digested it. And it was a journey for me, almost a grieving process, because so much was put into what my team and I and the entire HR team, I think an organization, had built that got us to the point where the company was ready for that merge on a cultural level. And to have to walk away from that and step back from it, it's this really deep introspective process that you go through. And I think, honestly, the first several months of my journey were
allowing those emotions to flow and being real with what that meant for me internally, watching my team land great new opportunities for themselves, watching my colleagues and peers also do the same, and then coming to a place of really asking yourself, am I ready? Am I ready to put myself out there? Am I ready to like present in this new face with this experience behind me? It's very powerful and impactful. Comes with a lot of emotions. And if we choose to look at the silver linings, then you're right. There's also opportunities. And so I have taken the opportunity to connect with more salespeople, more one-off requests from LinkedIn of people I don't have direct contact with or relationships with who have reached out and said, hey, we're looking for an HR thought partner. Are you interested? And I'm just saying yes. I'm saying yes to every conversation that comes my way. And part of it has been a chance for me to share my HR experience and knowledge with, say, salespeople who would like user experience feedback, would like to improve their products. Part of it has been an opportunity for me also to reframe my story and prepare myself for those interviews that I've had where I wanted to feel confident about sharing who I was and let go of some of that negative emotion that flowed through me in the beginning. So for me, it's been an opportunity to do exactly what we're doing right here, which is having this conversation, or to speak to a salesperson I may have felt too busy to reply to 2 years ago. But now it's also helping me stay abreast of what's happening, what changes are going on in the market, in the HR space, in the communication space that are percolating up. So I ensure that when I do land my next opportunity, I'm well-versed and I have built some new relationships that I could call upon, new products that I think, wow, this could be really interesting, and bring it forward with me when I do land that next opportunity. It's a journey, and I think it is about looking at the silver linings as you go through all of the ups and downs and emotions that go with it.
Absolutely. And I think it's so interesting when you talk about developing those relationships, because in my experience, HR folks are often treading water because there are so many things that we have responsibility for doing and managing and handling. And so making the time for those relationships or to respond to those types of communications can be really challenging. It's one of the reasons as I reach out to people, I recognize not everybody has the bandwidth to talk at the same time. You mentioned something earlier, though, too, about the roller coaster that HR's been on. And I'm curious what your observations have been there, either from the conversations that you've been having where you've been keeping apprised of what's going on or what experiences different leaders or sales folks or the different people you're networking with have shared with you, or even just your own observations of that roller coaster of what is happening in that space that you're seeing.
In the Bay Area, specifically with a background in tech, my background isn't only in tech, it also goes back into finance and banking. So there's a bit of a dual view there. The last year, let's say 8 months to a year, has been very tumultuous in the tech industry, right? We've been seeing swaths of layoffs and reorganizations. We have also been seeing some of those decisions maybe were made without thorough thought through on moving forward strategy, especially tied to people. And so now rehiring some of the same people that were just impacted. And all of this, at least in the Bay Area, has definitely led to uncertainty, a sense of scarcity effect. And I have personally witnessed through the journey of going through COVID, shifting workplace strategy from in-office to hybrid to remote, fully remote, and all the emotions and changes that went through it. And honestly, I think a level of fatigue that many people hit through the stress of COVID, whether you had children and you were dealing with remote learning, or you had elderly loved ones and you were caretaking, or just the stress of the world, to be perfectly honest, bearing down on us. To go through that journey for here. It definitely felt like it lasted about 2 years. And then moving out into a place where you began to feel a sense of normalcy and taking a deep breath. Okay, we're returning, right? Schools are back in. We're having family gatherings. All of the sense of to move right into a stage of job scarcity, volatile markets. This is very stressful. People are really the resiliency that we may have normally had within ourselves and our nervous systems are exhausted at this point. And I think that it's very grievously being represented by LinkedIn posts you're seeing of people with mental health issues and the decline of mental health. Like the stress has just been building and there's little respites that we haven't had a big enough sigh of relief maybe to date following COVID and now the market changes to really, I think, as a world, take a deep breath and say, okay, we can all catch our footing. Let's have a summer picnic. Let's just enjoy ourselves a little, right? It's a little bit too much for most people.
Well, and it's interesting how you phrase that of taking that deep breath and relaxing a little, because I almost think as we understand how how nervous systems work, and we understand how that stress built up over time, right? The baseline, people's baseline of stress kept getting raised as there was more stress and there wasn't time for recovery. There wasn't time to bring it back down. And so people have been operating in this state of stress and it's built up almost like I use the analogy, it's like carrying boulders around. And so just having a relaxing day doesn't take the boulders off. It maybe helps a little bit for the moment, but it doesn't change what has become now stored in the nervous system or what has been triggered in the nervous system. And so it really takes a continuous practice and understanding of how the nervous system works and what is being triggered. And as you talk about the environment and the scarcity and the fear of the market and job loss and finding new jobs and how am I going to support my family and all of those things just keep triggering the same nervous system states, right? The same fight, flight, or freeze responses that are embedded in our nervous systems. And unless people are educated in how to move through those states and how to manage and make shifts and changes in them, they're going to keep getting triggered. And I keep hearing the comment from a lot of people of, there's just this feeling of almost dazed and confused or just feeling a little bit like disconnected, not fully there, sense of, which I think is the nervous system sense of survival of just trying to help people keep getting through, keep getting by as they continue to encounter the different stresses that you were talking about.
I 100% agree. And I do think that if you can learn some techniques to help your nervous system relax, then it is much easier to navigate the challenges in the onslaught that we're facing and the uncertainty that's hitting us from every side. So yeah, I 100% agree with that. One of the components I saw that really played out through COVID and has continued, because there still is, of course, different variants and it's not gone, it's coming back in different ways, but it's the connectivity. And that's really what has, I saw, taken people to a place where they were not finding restoration was through a loss of connectivity in the ways that we typically would rely on it, whether it be a coffee break, right? And we're going through this huge transformation, all of the return to office mandates and policies that have been put into effect recently. So you have a push because they want that collaboration, they want that connection, they want that culture back instilled into the office. It's almost like back to the sigh, a deep sigh, back into our office spaces. But then you have a whole population of people that do not want to go back to the office. They're looking for remote roles. The statistics of those applying to remote roles are so much higher than those applying to the hybrid or in-office roles. And so we're in this new precipice of work because we as humans in all this time have never connected on a day-in, day-out basis without necessarily being in contact with humans face-to-face, not through a two-dimensional screen, but truly in face interaction in person. And so we're evolving. We're coming up with vocabulary. We're coming up with mandates and how they're worded and what those communication statements are saying to people and how people are reacting to them. And this whole myriad of another layer of not only maybe fatigue and nervous system exhaustion, but now do we know how to take ourselves into hyper-dispersed, remote first or remote based work in a way that is fulfilling to the human need, right? And our needs as humans to connect, but also productivity, collaborative workspace, and all these other factors that we're trying to put into place beyond just, you have to go to the office. This is where we do it. We do the work here. We're collaborative here. Mandates that are going out. So it's a new, I don't remember any time in history we've ever experienced such a large scale change in our work environment back to probably the industrial revolution,
that's
right?
What I was thinking too. Yeah, back to then.
Yeah. So.
But I think what's interesting as you talk about the remote work and the one of my challenges with this topic, which everyone talks about, it's still, I keep waiting for it to die down, but it really doesn't, is I think that it's often seen as black or white. Either you're a person who wants to return or doesn't want to return, who wants to stay remote. And I think from a neuroscience perspective, I think that there's a lot more layers to that of what is really going on for each individual person that's leading them to that conclusion. So I was preparing an engagement survey report for one of our clients. And one of the things I put in there, I started to list the things that have changed from pre-COVID to post-COVID that may be impacting a person's desire to be able to work remotely versus go into the office. So things like childcare hours changing. There's a massive childcare provider shortage. And so a lot of after-school programs have wait lists. I know my son was on one. There's where daycares used to stay open till 7 p.m. They're closing at 5:30. You have to be there or it's a charge per minute. There's just changes in the broader context of life, in the broader expectations. And then you factor in the benefits that people got of being able to have dinner with their children at night, whereas maybe before they didn't make it at home in time for that, or having breakfast in the morning, whichever it is, those moments became important to people in a way that maybe they hadn't identified before. And now the loss of those becomes an actual safety risk. It becomes a, if I don't have this time with my family, or if I go into the office, now I'm going to risk my connection with my kids or this relationship. And so it's actually another triggering event. It's another triggering challenge. And so I think when you dive into one of the things like challenge some of the leaders that I worked with was to dive into the nuance with individual people of what is keeping them or from wanting to return or vice versa, what making them want to return. And as you identify that, then, okay, if in person's really important, how do you shift and adjust? Do you allow people to work 30 minutes less during the day so that they can get home or get to the daycare on time or whatever the thing is? But that requires a paradigm shift of time-based work to energy-based work, to what are people actually accomplishing? How are they managing that energy? How are they producing versus just that I'm getting the necessary hours out of a person's day or taking their hours out of a person's day, which I think is a big shift for a lot of people to make. And one of the things I think breaks down in all of this is the communication, is how people are communicating around the issue and getting into those details and understanding specific circumstances. And I know you and I talked a lot about the words that we're using and how important they are and how people are showing up, whether they're showing up authentically or not. So I guess I want to dive into that with you a little bit and talk about some of your experiences or your observations with how those things are impacting people in workplaces and their relationships and how they're interacting.
Yeah. I think, Jessica, a really important point, because you said it right in the beginning, is that what we're facing is not new. The issues were there before COVID. They just weren't. And we may have even, as leaders, identified and knew what some of them were, but we were either not supported, not funded, not put as a priority to deal with addressing so many of them. So it feels like this is a little bit more of peeling back an onion that has been sitting in the kitchen for a long time, and you knew the onion was there. You just didn't want to go through the pains of peeling it. And so now, through COVID, through the changes that happened, through, absolutely, you're right, people finding connection with their families that they maybe didn't realize they were missing, all of a sudden, it's okay, but I'm willing to peel this onion because it's important enough to me. And I know we can do it in a different way. And that's what COVID and all of the changes, workforce strategy changes, really brought to the forefront. So they were there before. They just didn't have, the onion just didn't have to be peeled. So now we have this peeling onion that's got layers. And the communication that we have to put in place as leaders and as companies as we're navigating it really makes or breaks the experience. And it's easy. I started my career back around the dot-com boom, and I have now seen a lot of fluctuations through market changes. And oftentimes it's feast or famine. And when we're in feast periods, it's, I want to attract top talent. How do I do this? Let's give lots of swag. Let's have lots of company barbecues and happy hours and all this investment in different ways, because I'm really concerned about how our employer value proposition works. All these terms that have evolved over the years, but this is the essence of what began in those early 2000s, late 1990s. And not just in the tech industry, in broad stroke industry, because it was feast. And then we moved to famine. And famine is a mindset of the market's tough. You're lucky you have a job. Sometimes, depending on what crisis has happened, you may be lucky to also have a hole. And not to make light of it, but it is a scarcity effect that draws people in. And suddenly, our leaders, our companies may not need to worry so much about the employee experience, right? It's not top of mind. It's not key investment area. But what happens if people are, the communication's not given care, then you end up with disengaged employees. They're there, they're working for you, but they're not giving it their best because they maybe feel disgruntled by the way things are being handled, their needs not being met through whatever their personal life needs may be, or their work environment needs, right? Or the fact that maybe they are not co-located with their manager and they're struggling to navigate the career progression that they would like to be on, because they can't get the visibility that they need with their managers. Again, these issues were all there before, and as HR professionals, we knew it. But now we're in a place of communicating about them makes a really big difference. And we now know through ROI, through a lot of employee experience data, that it's proven that it makes a difference on how committed, how productive, how engaged your workforce is. So communication is a key facet of it. And what are you doing to open those channels to create an authentic communication plan focused on your employees and attracting the employees you want.
So let's hit in a little bit. I agree with everything you've said. And I want to hit on the last thing you said around authentic communication. And I'm not sure I totally recognized until, you know, you described earlier your journey, your identity, when you leave one organization to go to another and you have to find yourself a little bit and figure out yourself. I think that there's, as I went through that challenge myself a number of years ago, that was like a real authenticity, self-discovery phase of understanding what really is my authentic voice versus the voice that I used to align with leadership or to support the leadership or the direction that the CEO or the company was setting. And so I'm curious a little bit to have you describe, when we think of authenticity of leaders, what does that look like? Are those authentic communications? What does that mean to people? And how do people necessarily tell the difference?
It's funny you mentioned that because, for instance, AI has been hot in the market with the role it can play in crafting communications and rewrite your resume, rewrite your job descriptions, right? All these avenues. And so I dabbled in it because communications is a bread and butter of what I do. And so I wanted to play and I wanted to become familiar with what role it could serve for me moving forward. And what I observed, in full transparency, it's a powerful tool. Absolutely. But it's so sanitized, it loses heart and it loses a tone of voice. And it's hard to describe that in a way that maybe makes sense, especially on a corporate level. But I think that, and I've experienced, when people hear that tone, that voice, even through written communication, they really resonate with it. And the truth is, sometimes it has hard messages behind it. The messages aren't necessarily or always easy. But when there is heart and when there is authenticity and when there is a true voice behind it that carries that message, people respond, and they typically can respond very well. They may not love it. They may not like it, but they understand the vision. They understand what you're working towards. They realize that these are the changes. Oftentimes, again, peeling the onion, an authentic voice acknowledges just where we are and then builds where we want to go. And most people do know in their hearts where we are within their company. And that resonance is so powerful. It can really change the trajectory of the tough messages that need to be given when there is a voice, a heart, an essence behind the message. And it's much easier to translate that into maybe a town hall because you have a person standing up there saying it. But the truth is, reading off of a script, making a business decision, and like you said, just following what the business decision needs to be simply because that's a business decision, whether or not you agree with it or not. If you deliver that in person, you can deliver it just as badly as it can be delivered in a memo. There's no saving grace. And sometimes it can be worse, to be perfectly honest, because then you probably have a recording. So that humanness, we as humans, we talk about AI, but the reality is the human brain looks for the imperfections in our intonation, in our facial features, in our facial expressions. In the world, nothing is perfect. And so when you deliver messages that are too perfect, that are maybe AI crafted and just so perfect, it doesn't resonate with people because we're not looking for that. We're looking for the human touch that gives an imperfection to a good message, to a bad message. It doesn't really matter. We may not like it, but we will connect with it and it will be more authentic than trying to deliver something inhuman.
And it's funny because it makes me think back to a former CEO that I worked for who drove me nuts. There was always a typo. Anything he sent, there was always a typo in what he sent. And my team and I used to joke at least people will know it was him, like that he wrote it, like he really did write it. Somebody else didn't fix it, because he would write that in. And I think that's been my experience with AI as well. And we know from the neuroscience of how we interpret information and communication that, to your point, our facial expressions, our muscles, our tone of voice, all of that is impacting what we communicate and how people internalize and understand that communication, whether it's verbal or in written form. And there was this really cool study that I came across where they looked at individuals that had received Botox injections and the effects of Botox injections. And what I thought was really interesting, of course, it would potentially have an impact on other people's interpretation, right, of their facial expressions, because they had numbed out certain muscles. So those muscles weren't gonna work the same way or as they would have before. But what was really interesting was it impacted the individuals themselves, that their ability to use their facial muscles in their communication, because they had used Botox and were no longer able to do that, impacted their ability to mirror other people's expressions, which is actually how we internalize what we experience. So you'll often see it's called mirror neurons. You'll see people actually mirror the behaviors or the expressions of other people. And that's part of internalizing that message. That's part of like our bodies authentically saying, oh, I see what you're experiencing. And now that those parts of my brain are also lighting up. And that people that were not able to do that started to lose that sense and that ability to interpret it in other people, and that ability to have that same level of empathetic connection or understanding of other people. And I think that that was a really interesting observation of what we know about how our brains work, and that authenticity can't be faked, that you can't stand up there and pretend, because it's quite literally coming out of every signal, every message that you're delivering. Either it's natural or it's not. It's either who you are or it's not. And I think when there's a mismatch, when someone is trying to speak empathy, but you don't feel empathy, or speak compassion, but you don't feel a compassionate engagement, is when there's this confusion that exists within people. And that's what I've seen in leaders, where I've seen this attempt to say the right thing or do the right thing, but not delivering it from a meaningful place, from a connected and understanding place. And so then it falls flat, then it doesn't have the same effect, that it doesn't have the same impact that it would if it felt genuine, if it felt real, if it felt authentic. And that can be bad things as well as good things. I think that there are really terrible leaders in the world who show up very authentically, and you experience that. You're like, oh, that's really who they are. They are showing up authentically. Mm-hmm. And then there's really great leaders who try to show up differently or try to make themselves seem some kind of way. And you don't feel that connection because it is such a neurophysiological response. It is such an embodied response.
I 100% agree. And I have coached and worked and crafted the narratives of many leaders who have had the courage to step into difficult conversations, whether it was related to DEIB or it was related to new workforce strategies and hyper-dispersed teams around the world. And the coaching always comes back down to perspective. We talk about emotional intelligence and that leaders, good, strong leaders, have much higher levels of emotional intelligence. And this comes from most often perspective, because it's 99% of reality. My perspective makes my reality. Your perspective makes yours. And as a leader stepping into these difficult conversations, even if we personally have never been exactly in that position, right? Not co-located with my manager, not facing a glass ceiling, right? Whatever it is. But if they can find something in themselves
that gives them the perspective to relate to it. And they can speak from that point of view to connect with their audience. It's almost a wow moment. And it is a wow moment, not because they were perfect. It's a wow moment, not because they've even shared their own personal story, because maybe it doesn't directly correlate, but it connects them to the broader human experience. And that vulnerability allows their audience, their employees, to feel connected to them. Most of the leaders I worked with attend to, and I can relate, you mentioned it yourself, want to create this persona of who we are and stand in that and feel very comfortable in that space, right? This is my work person and this is my personal life person, and we're not the same. And you lose a part of yourself. Back to the very beginning, the journey I've been on for the past 8-9 months has been almost like suturing a doll back together, taking the two sides that have been split down the middle, because that's what we have been taught, especially as women, but truthfully, all people have been taught this, that you really can't bring both layers of yourself, both sides of yourself, to the conversation at work. And I think as leaders, we're doing a great disservice to ourselves and to our companies and to our employees. So what is that authentic leadership? What is that authentic communication? It's bringing that vulnerability forward. It's bringing those flaws and imperfections to the table and saying, here they are. And I'm still a strong leader. I still have a vision. I still believe we're working towards something. Is everybody on board? And those messages, they go a long way. Sometimes they even make history. You don't know. So it's like the courage to step into that space, to join the perspective of the audience of what everybody else is experiencing, be vulnerable, to take it to something and have a look through and can relate to, and blend that all into one complete person that steps forward in front of others and can have the courage to stand there in grace.
I think that's so powerful. And I think when you think about people who are on stage or who really are acting or playing a role, it feels very different than when there's a person who's genuinely delivering a message, who's delivering their own message. And one of my favorite kind of neuroscience bits of data is that our brains actually make decisions 10 seconds before we're consciously aware of the decision that they've made. So they can measure activity in our prefrontal cortex that we have made a decision about whatever we're engaging in before we become consciously aware of it. And so I think what's so powerful about that in this context is that our brains are going to decide whether a leader's authentic or not, or whether what we're hearing matches up or not, based upon all of our experiences and our neural pathways and how our bodies and brains work before we're even consciously evaluating or thinking about it. And I think that speaks to, at least for leaders out there, that you really can't fake it, and that the need to really show up genuinely is so important and authentically. And what I observed is that leaders were forced into that in COVID, where their kids were in the background, or they were at home. They were not able to separate their two environments the way maybe they had before. And so they didn't have a choice but to show up really authentically. And I think a little bit, it was like the genie got let out of the bottle. And now those that are trying to put it back in, no, this is who I am here and it's different than here, are having a struggle with that because people really appreciated when leaders were authentic. They really saw a difference in that. And there's a struggle to return to something that's different.
I completely agree. I witnessed it. I experienced it. There was a rawness, a truth. And it didn't have to be put behind the proverbial Wizard of Oz curtain that held it all together. And instead, it was out there. And people are, I believe, and experience that people are looking for more of that. They want that feeling. because back to the very beginning, we lost connection with people through a loss of intimacy, hugging, being together, sitting less than 6 feet together, right? There was a loss of our close space intimacy that we shared with our friends and peers and colleagues. And we're looking for other ways to gather that back. And one of the ways is by, I'll show you my vulnerability. I'll show you my raw side. I'll show you my imperfections. If you can be willing on a Zoom call to show me yours and talk about that. Someone walking in through the door behind me unexpectedly, whatever that those little ways are, but it makes us human. And humans are imperfect. We know this from the moment we're born. We look to our mother's faces for the imperfections, right? And we look to our mothers to sing to us through their voices, which are imperfect and not computerized to make it better. We look for this very, very early on. And so I believe we're still looking for that connection. And we have to move forward and be productive and engaged and pull things together. But I do think you can have both if you bring coherence into that leadership, and that coherence will fuel the authenticity as you draft your messages and you show up for your teams. It will show through.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you hit on that coherent side of things, because I think you're right that being in that coherent, balanced state, being able to show up as who you really are and communicate in a truthful and clear way will distinguish leaders from AI, will distinguish our humanness from the artificial intelligence that's out there, and allow us to feel drawn to the relationships and communications and connections that are so important to our health, to our liveliness as human beings, to why we exist and beyond, right? It really is the key to everything that we do. So this has been such a great conversation, Olivia. I want to give you a chance to give any final thoughts to our listeners. I know we've talked a lot about how important authentic leadership is, how that plays out, and how the words that leaders use really matter. But beyond even just the words, how they communicate those words really matter as well. What, if anything, would you like to leave our audience with today in terms of your insights or your parting wisdom?
Yeah. I think the key word is courage. What we're talking about takes courage. It takes a willingness to get beyond the busyness of meeting after meeting, demand after demand, and take a step back and reframe for ourselves. Are we in coherence? Are we fully bonded and attached? Are we presenting our best selves? And are we caring for the people who are around us or who are influenced by our decisions? Because oftentimes, especially senior leaders, their reach is much farther and wider than we maybe wrap in our heads, right? It's a circle of influence. And so are we taking the time to show up and present in our flawed and imperfect truths, right? Because that's really what it is. And that will bring the authenticity and that will bring the coherence to the forefront and help our teams and our network who may be struggling looking for jobs, whatever capacity of people you're working with, will help them to feel more connected and more inspired by what you have to say.
So I really love that you hit on that. And I'm just going to add a little bit to that, because I think it's so powerful. When we talk about courage is the highest expression, or is our, when our gut brain, our gut is also brain, it has neurons in it. When our gut brain is operating at its best, when it's performing at its very best, it's courageous. There's courage there. And one of the prime functions of our gut is also action taking. And so I think that when a leader, and I think you said this, so I just want to emphasize it, when a leader has the courage to speak authentically, has the courage to stand up and to do the things and take the actions, especially as it relates to people that are maybe not expected, are maybe not the commonplace way to manage or support or respond to challenges in the workplace, that those leaders can inspire action in people that far surpasses anything that they otherwise would have accomplished. And so if a leader can lean into that courage, the courage to try and do and communicate, to do things differently and communicate authentically with their people, they may inspire performance in their people and results in their organizations and businesses and workplaces far beyond what they're currently seeing. And I actually think that people are hungry for that. We want to follow a courageous leader, a creative, a compassionate, and a courageous leader who is willing to show up in that way, who's willing to show up authentically and willing to do the things that are hard, but going to make a bigger difference, going to really bring about change and help make workplaces be even better into the future.
I completely agree. And I have witnessed and I have experienced this. So it can lead to astounding results. And pulling back those layers of fear and bringing up that courage definitely can be bring the results that our companies, our marketplace needs and wants. But we need leaders who are willing to engage and do it.
Absolutely. So if you are a leader out there listening to this episode, I want to challenge you to lean in to that courageousness, to that courage to show up authentically, to do and take action on things that are not maybe the traditional ways of running a business or managing people or operating in the workplace, and to see the benefits that you will get from your people when you show up in that way. And I want to encourage you all to always be looking at, no matter what role you're in, because we're all leaders in our own homes, how we can be the most creative, compassionate, and courageous humans that we can be and show up authentically if for no other reason than for our children's and our children and our families, because it will make a difference. It will create greater results, at least in our home, if not in our workplaces or even the world. So as always, when I end any episode, I want to remind all our listeners to just always keep evolving, keep growing, keep rewiring those neural pathways to create a life filled with exceptional experiences where you can look back on your life one day and say, I truly lived an exceptional life and I enjoyed my journey. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and I will be back again next week with another episode.